soon. Already he was thirsty again. There's no time to waste. Very well, he thought, struggling against the rising flutter of dread. Very well, then, consider it a beast to be destroyed. What did hunters do when they wanted to destroy a beast? The answer came quickly. A pit. The spider would fall into it, and the pin, sticking up like a long, sharp spike. Quickly, he took the thread coil from his shoulder and flung it down. Unslinging the spear, he began to scrape at the sand using the pin as he would a hoe. It took him 45 minutes of constant digging to finish. Face and body dewed with sweat, his muscles shuddering, he stood in the bottom of the pit, looking up its sheer walls. If the thread weren't hanging down, he himself would be trapped. After resting a while, he pushed the spear into the sand so the point stuck up at a slight angle. He pushed it in deep and packed hard, wet sand around it so it would be secure. Then he climbed up the thread, pulled it out after him, and stood by the side of the pit, looking down into it. Almost immediately, doubts began to assail him. Would it work? Wouldn't the spider run up its sides as easily as it ran up a wall? What if it missed the pin? What if it jumped back before it touched the pin? Then he'd have nothing to fight it with. Wouldn't it be better to do as he had done in the carton that time, hold the pin out and let the spider impale itself on the point? He knew he couldn't do it that way, not now. He was too small. The impact would knock him over. He remembered the hideous sensation of that great black leg reeking over him. Oh, he couldn't face that again. Then why stay? He wouldn't answer. One thing more. He'd have to cover up the pit after the spider was in it. Could he possibly bury it in sand? No, that would take too long. He walked around until he found a flat piece of cardboard that was wide enough to drop over the pit. He dragged it back. That was it, then. He'd lure the spider here, it would fall in on the pin, and he would throw the cover over it and sit on it until he was sure the spider was dead. He licked his lips. There was no other way. He stood quietly for a few minutes, catching his breath. Then, although still tired and still a little breathless, he started off. He knew that if he waited any longer, his resolve would go. He walked across the desert, searching. The spider must be in its web. That's what he'd look for. He walked in carefully measured strides, looking around anxiously. There was a cold stone lying in his stomach. He felt defenseless without the pin. What if the spider got between him and the pit? The stone dropped, making him gasp. No, no, he argued desperately. I won't let it happen. Sound again. He started, then realized that it was the settling of the house. And regain his stride, muscles at a constant anticipating tension. It was getting darker. He was going deeper and deeper into the shadows, walking farther from the window light. Frightened breath made his chest jump a little. It was the way with black widows, he knew. Naturally reticent and secretive, they built their webs in the most dark, secluded corners. He went on in the deepening gloom, and there it was, high on its web it hung, a pulsating black egg, a giant ebony pearl with legs clinging to the ghostly cables. There was a dry, hard lump in Scott's throat. He wanted to swallow, but the throat seemed calcified. He felt as if he were choking as he stood there staring at the giant spider. It was clear now why he hadn't seen it all day. Underneath its motionless bulk, hanging slackly from the web, was a fat, partially eaten beetle. Scott felt the nauseous foaming in his stomach. He closed his eyes and drew in a shuddering breath. The air seemed to reek of stale death. His eyes jerked open. The spider hadn't moved. It was still immobile, its body like a glossy black berry hanging on a milky vine. He stood, shuddering, looking at it. Obviously, he couldn't go up after it. Even if he had the courage for it, the web would doubtless snare him as it had the beetle. What could he do? Immediately, inclination told him to leave unobserved as he had approached. He even backed away several yards before he stopped. No, he had to do it. It was senseless, unreasonable, insane, and yet he had to do it. He crouched down, looking up blankly at the huge spider, his hands stroking unconsciously at the sand. His hands twitched away from something hard. He almost fell back, gasping. Then, eyes fluttering up and down to see if the spider had heard his gasp, and to see what it was he'd touched, he saw the fragment of stone on the sand. He picked it up and juggled it in his palm, a knot in his stomach tightening slowly. His chest rose and fell with quick, erratic breaths. His gaze was fixed again on the bloated body of the spider. He stood up quickly, teeth clenched. He walked around the small area and found 9 more pieces of stone like the first one. He put them all down before him on the sand. Far across the desert, the oil burner suddenly began to roar. He braced himself against its thundering, hands over his ears. The sand trembled under him. Up on the wall, it seemed as if the spider moved, but it was only the web stirring slightly. When the burner clicked off, Scott picked up a stone, hesitated for a long moment, then fired the stone at the spider. It missed, whizzing over the dark round body and knocking a hole through the web. Filaments of the web stirred out from the edges of the hole like windblown curtains. The spider flexed its legs, then was still again. "You're still safe," his mind warned quickly. "You're still safe, for Christ's sake, get out of here." Stomach muscles bored-like, he picked up the second stone and hurled it at the spider. He missed again. This time the stone stuck to the web, swaying a little, then sagging heavily, pulling down the spider's perch. The spider oozed darkly up the gossamer cables. It twitched its legs, then was motionless once more. With a half-sobbed curse, Scott snatched up the third stone and flung it. It bulleted through the air in a blurring arc and bounced off the spider's glossy back. The spider jumped. It seemed to hang suspended in the air. Then it was on the web again, spurting across the silken hatching like a giant egg running loose. Scott jerked up another stone and pitched it, another stone and pitched it, half horrified, half in a demented fury. The stones plowed into the gelatinous web, one striking the other, tearing a second hole. "Come on!" he suddenly screamed at the top of his voice. "Come on, damn you!" Then the spider was skimming down the web, body trembling on its scrabbling legs. Another cry died in Scott's throat. With a sucked-in breath, he whirled and started racing across the sand. 10 yards from where he'd started, he glanced back hurriedly across his shoulder. The spider was on the sand now, an inky bubble floating after him. Sudden panic clouded his brain. His legs seemed without strength. "I'm falling," he thought. It was an illusion. He was still running hard, mouth open. His gaze flew on ahead, searching for the pit, but he couldn't see it. A little farther yet. He jerked his head around again. It was gaining on him. His eyes turned back quickly. "Don't look," he thought. A stitch slashed up his side. His fleeing sandals pounded on the sand. He kept on searching ahead for the pit. He couldn't help it. He looked back. It was closer still, quivering blackly on its leg stalks, scrambling almost sideways over the sand, eyes fixed on him. He sprinted wild-eyed through the shadows and the light. Where was the pit? For now, he'd gone too far. He knew it, and was almost to the paint cans and jars. No, it was impossible. He planned it too carefully for it to happen like this. He glanced back, still closer, scrambling, hopping, bogging, fluttering, a horrible blackness running at him, higher than a horse. He had to go back again. He started running in a wide semicircle, praying that the spider would not cut across his path. The sand seemed to hold him back more and more, his sandals plowing into it, making quick sucking sounds. He looked back again. It was following in his wake, but it was still closer. He thought he heard the wild scratching of its legs on the sand. The spider was 12 yards behind him. It was 11 yards behind him. 10 yards. Still running, he sprang into the air to see if he could locate the pit. He couldn't. His body jarred down heavily. A whining fluttered in his throat. Was it going to end like this? No, wait, a hit, to the right. He altered direction and dashed for the parapet of sand around his pit. 9 yards behind, the huge spider raced after him. The pit grew larger now. He ran still faster, gasping through his teeth, arms pumping at the air. He skidded to a halt at the edge of the pit and whirled. It was the vital moment. He had to stand there until the spider was almost on him. He stood, petrified, watching the black spider bear down on him, getting taller and wider with every second. He saw its black eyes now, the cruel pincer-like jaws beneath it, the hair sprouts on its legs, the great body. It rushed closer and closer. His body twitched. No, wait, wait! The spider was almost on top of him. It blotted out the world. It reared up on its back legs to cover him. Now! With a tremendous spring, he leaped to one side and the lurching spider toppled into the pit. The ghastly, piercing screech almost paralyzed him. It was like the distant scream of a gutted horse. Only instinct drove him to his feet to grab the cardboard and slide it rapidly toward the pit. The screeching continued, and suddenly he found himself screaming back at it. As he shoved the cardboard across the top of the pit, he saw the great black body vibrating wildly, the thick legs scraping and clawing at the sides of the pit, raking at the sand, kicking it up in clouds. Scott flung himself across the cover. Immediately he felt it lurch and jump beneath him as the spider's body heaved up against it. Flesh cold and crawling, he clung to the jolting cardboard scrap, waiting for the spider to die. "I did it," he exulted. "I did it!" His breath choked off. The cardboard was tilting up. Terror drove a steel-gloved fist into his heart. He started sliding off the cardboard as it tilted more steeply. When the black leg flailed out like the twig-spiked branch of some living tree, he screamed. He began sliding toward the leg, sliding, sliding. Instinct drove him to his feet. As the cardboard was flung up violently, he added the springing of his legs to the impetus and leaped high above the leg. He landed in a heap beside his coil of thread and whirled on hands and knees, staring at the pit. The spider was crawling out, dragging the impaling pin behind. His body was convulsed with a terrible shudder. His hands clutched at something as he struggled up and started backing away. "No," he muttered flatly. "No, no, no." The spider was completely out of the pit now, moving awkwardly toward him, the pin still in its body. Suddenly it leaped up, landed, then spun around in a sand-scouring circle trying to dislodge the pin. "Do something," screamed his mind. He stared, sickly fascinated, at the jerking spider. Suddenly he was conscious of the pinhook in his hands, and then he was running with it, uncoiling the rest of the thread. Behind him, the spider still writhed and flung itself around, blood drops flying out from it and spattering in murky ribbons across the sand. Abruptly, the spear came loose. The spider whirled toward Scott. He was swinging the hook around his head at the end of 6 feet of thread. It flashed around him like a glittering scythe, swishing at the air. The spider ran right into it. The point drove into its bulbous body like a needle plunged into a watermelon. It leaped back sharply, screeching again, and Scott raced around a heavy scrap of wood, looping the thread around it until it was secure. The spider rushed at him, the pinhook deep in its body. Scott turned and fled. It almost caught him. Before the thread grew taut and jerked the spider back, one of its black legs flailed across his shoulder, almost dragging him back. He had to fall to the sand and tear away from it before he could scuttle backward to freedom. He stood up shakily, hair dangling across his forehead, face grimy with dirt. The spider tried to leap at him, legs slashing, jaws spread wide to clamp on him. The pin jerked it back. The hideous screeching knifed into Scott's brain again. He couldn't stand it. He fled across the sand, the spider following him as far as it could, leaping and dragging fiercely at its binding. The pin was slick with blood. Teeth set on edge, Scott flung handfuls of sand across it, then grabbed it up and moved back quickly, spear extended and braced against his hip. The spider leaped. Scott jabbed out quickly, and the spear point pierced the black shell. Another drip of blood began. The spider leaped again. The spear point tore its hide and drew blood. Again and again, the spider leaped into the spear point until its body was a mass of punctures. By then, the screeching had stopped. The spider moved in slowly, rearing shakily on its weakened legs. Scott wanted it over suddenly. He could walk away and let it die now, but he wouldn't. For some fantastic reason, swimming in mists of past morality, he felt sorry for the spider now and wanted to end its suffering. Deliberately, he walked inside its circle of confinement, and with a final burst of violent effort, the spider leaped. The spear point pierced its body, and the spider fell into a shuddering heap, its poison-dripping jaws clamping shut inches from Scott's body. Then it was dead, its body lying still and gigantic on the bloody sands. Scott staggered away from it and pitched across the sand, unconscious. The last sound he remembered was the slow and awful scratching of the spider's legs, dead, but not at rest.